on. Hey, everybody, it's Johnny Moe. Thank you for joining me, and welcome to The Process. And we're going to be talking to a friend of mine who I met a few years ago, and we hit it off great. And just, he has a high level overview of what's going on in the industry, and that's where I like to be too. And when you're on that high level, you actually can kind of tell the future a little bit. And that's where he is versus just being reactionary to what's happening today. And I want to welcome the author of Real Estate at a Crossroads, Gregory Charloup.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me on here. It's great to be here. And it was great to meet you. We met back at NAR, and I'm glad we've kept up the friendship.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And, you know, they say you are the sum of the five people you're around most. And I say, you know, increase that 5 to 20 and just be around awesome people and awesome things.
I like that idea.
Right. So, man, I see you connecting on a high level with CEOs, founders, and other industry leaders. Some people know the names that we're about to talk to. Some don't, but they have brilliant minds. I believe that when you connect on this high level, like I mentioned, you almost see the future versus being reactionary when it gets here. Versus the things that are upon us now. We're looking at brokerage transformations. We see a large emergence of 100% companies, cloud-based companies. And I want to start there because you're seeing all sorts of stuff because you're connecting with these people. The industry is seeing these changes come through almost daily. Do you think that the old brokerage model will change over the coming years, or will there always be a need for that brokerage model in the brick and mortar?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, it's something we talk a lot about in the book. My sense is, and I spoke to leaders from a lot of different brokerages, including some virtual like eXp and some traditional like Century 21. And honestly, I think people are worried about the future of traditional brokerages. And you could see, like, even if you look recently, Realogy stock has been crashing lately. Mm-hmm. And they own a lot of the traditional brokerages. And, you know, the problem is, from the brokerage's perspective, is that they want to get top agents. Top agents are the people that sell the most stuff, right? And most home sales come from top agents. But top agents don't want to spend a lot on fees. You know, if you're out there and you're the top person in your town and you're selling houses left and right, you don't want to give a lot of your cut to a brokerage. So the trouble is that the brokerages can't charge these top people or the people selling the houses that much money. And at the same time, these days, the brokerage isn't adding much value to a lot of these top agents. I mean, think about it for a second. Imagine years ago, you wanted to sell your house. Let's say like 30 years ago, right? Let's say you didn't know a real estate agent. The way you'd find one is you might go to the Yellow Pages and you'd look up a brokerage that you knew, like maybe you heard of Keller Williams or something. So you look them up in the Yellow Pages and you call them up and they hook you up with a real estate agent. So the brokerage was really important back then, right? Because the brokerage was your access to the agent. And from the agent's perspective, the brokerage is important because they gave you all these tools and they were the ones that had the money to do full page marketing. And so from both sides, the brokerage played a key role. And because of that, they were able to have these wonderful conference rooms and beautiful pieces of property, and they could charge people a lot. But now, if you want to sell your house, like I'm actually in the process of selling my house now, I don't care who the brokerage is at all. Like, it didn't matter to me whether they were Century 21 or Coldwell Banker or Compass. I didn't care. I just cared about the agent. And these days, because it's so easy to find agents directly, people just look for the agent they know or they've heard about, and they could care less about their brokerage. So as a result, the brokerages don't add much value to the equation for most people, and so it's hard for them to command a lot of commission. They just can't charge their agents that much anymore, and that process is just going to accelerate. So I think in many cases, the role of the brokerage is going to have to change.
I definitely agree, and I also believe that, you know, if you look at the traditional brokerage, there's a lot of fat middle management, regional management in there, right? And with the downward pressure on commissions and on the consumer front with the brokerages, you know, 100% models and those types of things, there is less and less money for that to feed that middle management. So, you know, natural attrition is going to happen where they're going to have to change models. And if you look at some of these cloud-based models, you know, compasses and things like that. And Compass, I mean, I was with somebody the other day who's been being woed by Compass. And, you know, they're focused on, you know, the 10% of agents that actually demand the market, that command the market. So, you know, you take a look at their approach versus like some of the bigger companies that just want warm bodies in it because they know they're going to sell 2-3 houses a year, but you got 300 agents, so you got 600 sales. Compass is going the complete opposite route, saying we only want top producers. And by taking all those top producers or trying to attract a large portion of those top producers with buyouts and or marketing dollars and things like that, I think that's changing the game on a different front. And I think we're seeing the response from that, from the iconic companies that have been around forever. They're changing. They have to change. They need to bring more technology to the game just to try to woo their agents over. But if you're a top producer, I was in Naples the other day. Naples is unique. It's one of the wealthiest areas in the country. There's a lot of boutique type brokerages there, old school money, old school brokers, you know. So I question, will the transformation impact areas like that? And are there pocketed areas? But I really do believe that brokerages need to evolve with the time, because where we're seeing these cloud kind of things or the disruptors really have the advantage over a big, large brokerage, you know, the big ones, of course, the top five, if you want to say that. And KW is doing a good job, you know, trying to bring this technology to the table. It's whoever can get to the consumer wins, right? Because the consumer in this day and age, and it doesn't even need to be in real estate, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, the consumer wants instant information, but they also want some level of anonymity to get that. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I want to say something about Compass. You know, it's funny because it's almost like they read Real Estate at a Crossroads, because they focused on two of the big things that I think brokerages need to do, which is, number one, they need to attract top agents, which is obviously their business model. They want to get the top agents because they know that's where the sales are. And number two, they need to provide technology that's easy to use, that the real estate agents could sort of implement quickly and will give them the speed to market, like you were talking about. And so Compass is doing those two things. Now, you know, it's certainly possible that other companies will come along and copy what Compass is doing, but it's really almost like they read Real Estate at a Crossroads and they're following it. But, you know, you mentioned something about Naples, and I want to say something about that, because I think you have a really good point there, which is I think that there will be a trend towards companies like Compass or cloud-based brokerages, but I also think there is a role for these boutique brokerages, like what you're talking about in Naples. And, you know, we talk about this in the book, actually. There's a guy, he's a top agent now on the East Coast, Anthony Vitale, and he's been in technology for years, and he's in real estate. He knows about both tech and real estate, and he actually has a counterpoint to this whole thing, which is kind of like your Naples model. And the idea is, if you have a brokerage that's a brick-and-mortar place, but it's a place that people, consumers, want to go to, that could add value. And they don't want to go there because you have a nice conference room, and they don't want to go there because of your coffee machine. But if you could have stuff in the brokerage that makes the place worthwhile, like imagine you set up a nice brokerage, and inside the brokerage, let's say every Saturday you invite interior designers over, and they show you how to decorate your home. And let's say every so often you have vendors, like people that make window shades, or you have people like gardening experts, people that handymen that can show you how to do upgrades in your house or how to install your own backsplash. Say you made your brokerage a destination, a place that you want to go to, not just because you need to find someone to help you sell your house or buy your house, but because they'll help you even after you've bought your house. You buy your house, but then you can go there and they could help you afterwards, make your house look good, upgrade your house. Like, it shows that the broker cares, and it makes the brokerage a destination, a place people want to go to. They can meet other homeowners. They could find contractors that they like. If you do that, if you get the real estate agent involved in the whole process, not just buying and selling a house, because you don't really need real estate agents a lot of those times. But if your real estate agent can show that they actually care for the whole process, buying the house, selling the house, and afterwards, then I think you can make your brokerage a destination, and people will then really want to go there. And that would be the cloud brokerage anytime.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. And, you know, that those niche markets for sure. And even in the bigger markets, the city markets and things like that, if you brought that extra level of service, you know, the whole time you were talking about that, and I know you mentioned not about a coffee machine or something like that, but I've always heard of these. I've never seen one until last week when I was in Fort Lauderdale. And they're on Los Alas, which is, you know, like the Rodeo Drive of Fort Lauderdale for us. They had a Capital One Cafe. Now, you went in there, you could hang out, use the Wi-Fi and everything, and all your banking was right there. So banking was there, so you could do your banking, and it's almost like it was secondary. And imagine you had a real estate office that was set up almost like a Starbucks, in the same kind of theory, where, you know, a local insurance person could pop in, right, and use your Wi-Fi because they didn't want to drive 20 minutes to the office. And here's a free cup of coffee or whatever it is. Now, all of a sudden, you turn that place into exactly what you were talking about, have the shade person or the interior decorator come in on a particular schedule. Now, all of a sudden, you have this really cool, hip spot. And the more that we're talking about, I'm thinking, I want to open one of these now.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the Capital One Cafe, because we have one here and I love it. I'll just give a little plug to them. I go there all the time. They're always big. They have lots of light. Like, it's a place you want to go to. But you're right. Like, you make your, if you can make your office a destination, not because your conference room is impressive, mm-hmm. but because there's value there for consumers. Because like you said, yeah, I mean, I love coffee. Don't get me wrong. So if you serve coffee, if you have Wi-Fi, if it's a place you can just go hang out without people harassing you to buy things, mm-hmm. and if you have these vendors there, then it, like you said, it's a cool, hip spot, and it wouldn't be too hard to organize it. And the other thing is, as a real estate broker, you may be able to make some cash off that. Not just that you'll be attracting people to use your agents, but maybe you can charge these vendors to come there. You collect data about what people are doing, and you could sell that data. I mean, there's lots of ways you can monetize this, you know, besides just selling a house.
Absolutely. And I'm going to plug a little book I read the other day. It was suggested to me from one of my business partners, and it's called Talk Triggers. And that, what we just talked about, would be an amazing talk trigger. When people are talking about, hey, you got to head over to this place, and all of a sudden you're there and you got your office open, and it becomes that cool thing that people will talk about. Right? They're not talking about your business. They're not talking about your brand per se, but they're talking about you. And, you know, it's that talk trigger that opens conversations, which is so cool. Hey, I want to jump back just a little bit. You had mentioned Compass and you know, how technology is going to be important and everything. And in the book, you interview Bridget Frey and Jenny Strand about Redfin. And on a higher level, tell us about that interview. They talk a lot about technology, the consumer habits and data. How important will this become over the next, say, 5 years, right? 5 years is like, in technology, is like a decade, you know, like 100 years. It goes by so fast these days. Where are we headed, do you think?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned them. And Bridget was really phenomenal. She's the CTO of Redfin, and they were great. And I know, you know, some people like Redfin, some people don't. Everybody likes the website there. I mean, it's really like one of the go-to spots. But here's something they told me. They told me this story, and this stuck with me ever since. Now, anyone who's used Redfin's site, you know, you could enter in a particular search and save it, and they get notified if a house meets your criteria. So let's say, you know, you're looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, I don't know, 1,500 square foot house in Naples, right, in a certain price range. So you enter this criteria in and you save it, right? And then every time one of those places comes up, you'll be notified automatically by email. But here's what they said that I couldn't believe. What they can do is, based on houses you've looked at and other searches you've done, their artificial intelligence algorithm is able to predict houses you might like. And it turns out that the house, and then what they'll do is, so they say a house that they think you'll like, but it doesn't meet your search criteria, they'll send you that house too, because they think you'll like it. It turns out that their guess about the house that you'll like is better than your guess about the house that you'll like. In other words, people are more likely to look at and get the houses that they think you will want than the houses that you entered in that you were searching for. So they are better than you are about figuring out what type of house you want, which is really like mind blowing to me.
That's fantastic. That's mind blowing. And I think what it does there is, let's call the word leverage, right? It leverages, you're leveraging a technology to keep you from having to do the manual work or the guesswork. You're leveraging that technology.
Right, exactly. And so the trick here is they're collecting data. You know, every time someone uses their website, I use their website all the time. Even if I'm not going to use them, I still use their website. Every time people do that, they're learning. Their artificial intelligence is learning. They're learning what types of people like what types of houses, what features are important, what features aren't important. Every single time they're learning. And so they can take that and they feed that into the artificial intelligence. And every single day that gets better. You know, if you use their site 2 months from now, it's going to be better than today, not just because it has new features, but because it's smarter. Yeah. And its smartness is going to keep getting better in like an accelerating rate. So it's not going to be long before companies like Redfin or Zillow, other companies that use these data collection tools, are going to be much better than we are at figuring out what kind of houses people want, what features people need, how to price houses properly. I mean, where you can go with this is pretty incredible, and it's all sort of based on artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and I'm going to give a little shout out. Some people don't realize this, and you know, Saul Klein, our friend, mutual friend of ours, he's been preaching this for as long as I've known him. And what Redfin has is a VOW, virtual office website. And that's very different compared to IDX, where IDX might have like 15 data points. VOWs have something like 36 data points. Now, those aren't exact numbers, something similar. So you can actually get a lot more information on a VOW. The problem is they're obviously more expensive to have, and some people only do the IDX agreements and things like that. But that's where they really accelerated. And I think in anything, any technology, any business, when you're a little bit different, when you think a little bit different, where it's almost similar, but it's a little bit different, you can excel. And what they've done is taken those virtual office websites, the AI and the predictive and everything else, and they've created that ecosystem, which, yeah, seems to be working for them.
But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Saul. I'm a big fan of his also. And he really was a pioneer of this stuff like a decade or two ago.
Yeah, he was, you know what? I think he was born too early, right? He was a pioneer of all that stuff. And all that stuff he was talking about in the mid-90s is all coming true now. Right? And it's pretty wild. Let's talk a little bit further on some technology. You interviewed Michael Liam, founder of Cato, and talked about chatbots. And the real interesting point in that conversation that caught my attention was the discussion of NLP. And NLP is so powerful. We see lots of people using chatbots now. And what do you think of that trend? Are chatbots needed? And if so, what about the NLP approach? Is it more effective than the standard approach?
So I love this question. It's a great question. So NLP stands for natural language processing. And I'm going to ask everybody listening to this, when you're done listening to this interview, I'm going to ask you to do two things. Obviously, number one, go out and buy real estate at a crossroads. But number two, go to YouTube and look up Google Duplex. If you haven't seen this already, you have to watch this. And what Google Duplex is it's a completely voice-based computer, and it calls up and it sets up like a dinner reservation and a salon reservation, and it calls up these people. They don't know that a computer is calling, and it speaks to them, and it engages with them like a human would engage with them, and it even understands them when the person misspeaks. It understands when people don't use grammar correctly. And the computer, it actually adds like filler words like and to make it sound more like a real person. I mean, it's really like unbelievable. You talk about mind-blowing stuff, this is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. So I think that now companies like Cato, they're really leading the way in real estate chatbots. Hello Alex is another good company. And what they do is they create these devices, and you can put them on websites, you can use them on your phone. There are places that make them for Facebook Messenger. They're all over the place. And the idea of a chatbot is it's able to respond to people immediately. Now, millennials, they don't mind. There's lots of research on this. Millennials are very happy chatting with a chatbot. They don't mind the fact that the person at the other end of the line is not a person. They're cool with the fact that there's a computer at the other end. What people want is they want immediate service. They want their questions answered right away. And so when you have a chatbot on your website or Facebook page or even on the phone, it does two things. Number one, it satisfies your customer that it answers their questions immediately. It gives them the quick thing. And then it also qualifies them. So your chatbot can figure out, like, not just that there's a person interested in you, but it figures out that they want that 3-bedroom, 2-bath townhouse in Naples. It could figure out how much they want to spend. It could even set up an appointment with you directly to set up a phone call. Like, it does all this information for, it does all this stuff for you. So it makes your customers happy because your customers want speed. They don't want to waste time. Mm-hmm. And it makes you happy because it saves you time because you don't have to go through and ask them all these questions that your chatbot has already done for you.
Yeah.
Now, the NLP stuff, I love this natural language stuff like Google Duplex. I think that it'll probably be a couple of years before we exactly figure out how to use it. But it's just a matter of time because once you have it, when you have these systems, they talk for you, right? Not just on typing on a chatbot in a little screen, but like on the phone or wherever you want. And that's really going to impress people, and people are going to like it. The technology is going to be so good, and it's going to be so cheap that it's going to be hard to resist. I mean, it's going to be a lot cheaper than an employee, and they're not going to go out sick. You know, they're not going to take vacations. They're going to be there all. They're going to work at 2 a.m. I mean, it's really like it's a great technology, and I think in just a couple of years we're going to see this all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, I really believe in that, and I think that they, you know, just like all the other technology, it's advancing on such a high level, right? That we're going to see that go from just the manual chatbots to really in-depth chatbots, and that's what they're working on, right? They're working on some really, really deep technology for that. Another technology that is out there that you talk about, you interviewed, I hope I don't butcher this name too bad, you might be able to correct me, Ragnar Lifraser, founder of
Internet. Yeah. That's pretty good. He's got a tough one.
Yeah. But, you know, most people, when they hear blockchain, that's synonymous with cryptocurrency, right? Whatever the big Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin kind of put that whole blockchain theory on the map. And now people, even like the FDIC, the SEC, and all these people are looking at blockchain technology. And it was only a matter of time until that reached our world. So tell us what you think. What impact will that have, in your opinion, on the industry? Will it impact MLSs and create like one national MLS? What do you think about this blockchain technology?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So, you know, blockchain is exciting, and a lot of people, you know, they're really getting into it now. And like you said, Bitcoin is one example. So the basic premise of blockchain is instead of information being stored and owned in one place, like say you have a bank account with Wells Fargo, your information is stored on Wells Fargo's computers. Right. So Wells Fargo owns your information and they know how much money you have there. And it's just on those computers. It's subject to being hacked. If there's a problem with their computer, there's a problem with your information. With blockchain, the idea is there's this distributed ledger that nobody owns. It's just marked all over the place. So all the people, quote unquote, mining for Bitcoin, there's all these computers all over the world. Right. And so parts of the ledger, parts of the information about how much Bitcoin you have, for example, is on your computer, it's on my computer, it's all over the place. And so because of this widely distributed nature that's hard to tamper with, the theory is that the information is safer, it's harder to hack, and also it's almost free, basically, to access and to change. And so Bitcoin is an example of a cryptocurrency, which is one way to use blockchain. So Bitcoin, it's sort of like it's almost like a brand name, if you will, of a type of cryptocurrency. And it got a lot of attention as one type of cryptocurrency. But there's lots of these cryptocurrencies. And,
dozens, hundreds.
You know, it's Tons of them. And it remains to be seen, you know, whether Bitcoin will ultimately, I think what will probably happen is people will probably coalesce around a cryptocurrency, and maybe it'll be Bitcoin, maybe it'll be something better. You know, who knows? You know, the benefit of Bitcoin or these cryptocurrencies is that they're very hard to track. So if you want to spend it, people like governments don't know that you're spending it or who owns it because it's distributed, right? So it gives you some anonymity. It may be safer from hackers, although that isn't 100% sure, but probably. And the big thing is there's no sort of transaction fees or almost no transaction fees. You know, when you want to wire people money, normally you have to pay for that, and there's a delay. With Bitcoin, you could transfer them nearly instantaneously, and it's essentially free. So that's a big plus. The problem with things like Bitcoin, and the reason why I think it's been slow to be used, is it's very volatile. You know, if you look and you see what the value of Bitcoin is today versus tomorrow or next week, there's a huge fluctuation. So a lot of people are really nervous about this. It makes it hard to sort of use something that's that volatile. Whereas if you look at the dollar, you know, or the pound or something like that, it doesn't have nearly that level of volatility. But blockchain has other cool features. Like they have these smart contracts, for example, which I think can be really useful for real estate potentially, where you could potentially have deeds on the blockchain. And so instead of like the county recording the deed is online. And if I want to buy your house, conceivably I could transfer money to you with Bitcoin, and you could transfer the deed to me over the blockchain with a smart contract. And I bought your house, and we didn't change cash. We didn't involve the government. We didn't involve middlemen at all. And it's a secured, like, mutually agreed upon deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'll probably take a few years before these different aspects are used. And part of it is because real estate is such a huge transaction, so much money is involved, and because it's so regulated, you know, I think that people are going to be cautious. You know, it's kind of like medicine. You know, medicine uses technology at the edges, but everybody's a little bit nervous about adopting things too quickly because you don't want to screw it up.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what? If you're taking money away from the state, the local, and the federal, they're going to find a way to get back into the, or the banks.
That's true.
And that's why there's a whole lot of scrutiny around that, and they're trying to talk it down and everything. But at the same time, Wall Street's looking at using it. So it's just a funny thing. Hey, let's close it out with this, because I know you and I both understand on an agent level. We talked a lot about like technology and brokerage kind of things. Let's talk about the agents for a little, and you touch on some stuff in your book that is 100% in alignment with my philosophy. And that's agents need accountability and business acumen to truly survive, more so I think in the coming years than in the past. And you mentioned, with the emergence of like mega teams and these grown teams doing $250 million a year and, you know, taking up all the marketing dollars for whatever portals they might be buying. You mentioned in the book that time is the most valuable resource. I completely agree. Tell me about this and where agents can improve or where you see them failing or struggling in this particular approach.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a big one. And so I think time has two components. One of them we kind of talked about, which is speed, reaction speed, right? So if you get a lead on Zillow or any place you pay to advertise, you need to get back to that lead immediately, right? Because that's the moment that your lead is interested in a house. That's when they're ready to act. If you get back to them in an hour or in a day, they may have forgotten about you. They may not be interested in real estate at that moment. They may have found another agent. So you have to so one important component of time is speed. And so the way of improving speed is like what you were talking about before. Chatbots help you respond quickly. Setting up a system where you're notified on your phone when you get a lead right away is another option. Or a third one, which I'm a big fan of, is virtual assistants. You can have virtual assistants, and those people can respond right away. In fact, I'm selling the house where I am now, and I called this top real estate agent in the area. I wanted to use her. And the person I spoke to first was a virtual assistant. And she got all my information. She was very nice. And then she set up the appointment for me to speak with the real estate agents. And I was satisfied with that. So speed is one thing, but efficiency of time is the other, right? So you don't want to waste time and you want to get the best out of your time. And there's some good techniques of that. And I think, again, virtual assistants are big here, because the trouble is, like, some stuff, like, you need to do as a real estate agent, right? Like, you need to speak to your leads. You need to kind of, you need to work deals. You need to negotiate prices, stuff like that. You need to do that. But a lot of other stuff as a real estate agent, you don't have to do yourself, especially if you're not good at it or you don't like it or you're slow. You know, so if you don't like making Facebook ads or Instagram ads, or you don't know how to set up your CRM, you don't have to do that. Like, you can hire a virtual assistant to do that, or hire someone, or the college student down the street to do that. There's a lot of things that need to be done, but if you don't like it or you're not good at it, have someone else do it, because your time is better spent doing the stuff that only you as a real estate agent can do. Like, you have to negotiate the prices. You have to go to these client meetings, right? Like, if you're showing people houses, you have to do that. But you don't have to set up your CRM. You don't have to create your own Facebook ads. You don't even have to create your own Facebook content if you don't want to. You can hire someone to do it. So time management by outsourcing stuff is a big thing.
Yeah.
And then also, go ahead.
Talk about virtual assistants in there, and you're talking with Daniel Ramsey from My Help Desk, who runs a great system. Their VAs are very well trained and managed, where, you know, you got to be careful when you hire a VA. You just don't want to go on Fiverr or Upwork and just pick somebody that sounds good, because where is that level of accountability? That level of accountability then falls on you, where if you have a company, the level of accountability for their performance kind of falls on that company. So anytime you can leverage and another person, another system, anything else like that, it frees up your time and it frees up your responsibility. So then you can do what you're supposed to be doing, which is working not only in your business, but on your business and growing it, because, you know, you can have four or five VAs and do some amazing work and dominate a market, and that's cheaper than having an employee.
Right. And I just want to give you one other example, because this is pretty neat to me. There's a company called Revaluate, and what they do, and I had their CEO on my show, they're a pretty neat company. What they do is they're able to predict, based on these, like, all these data points, when people are likely to move. Like, let's say they see there's a family that's in a large house and their kid is just going to college or something like that. That family is likely to move, to downsize to a smaller house, because they don't need all those extra bedrooms because their kid is going to school. Or if someone has a divorce or a death, or if they retire or whatever. And so if you have, say, you have, I don't know, say you have like thousands of 5,000 contacts, right? You need to figure out who you should be reaching out to that's the most likely to use your service. Right now, you could just reach out to these 5,000 people randomly, or you could spam them with email all the time. But if you know that Jane Smith is much more likely to move than everyone else, then you can contact Jane Smith directly and invite her out to coffee, right? Because she's a really good use of your time, because she's very likely to move. Where you know, John Anderson, he has no need to move. And so when you keep spamming John with a bunch of emails, like, you're just going to annoy him. So there's some pretty cool technologies out there now that can make your time more efficient by targeting the people that are most likely to need your services.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool stuff. And that's a thing. I remember a few years ago, Gary had said, you know, something to the effect that, you know, mega teams and, you know, big teams and you know, even indie brokers that run their business like a team are going to be so powerful. And the reason it's going to be so powerful is because many of the things that we just talked about take capital. And with the agents, you know, coming into this business, most likely or most often, they're underfunded. They don't realize that they're starting a business, and businesses need one thing to survive, for sure. That's the blood, which is capital. So in order to grow into these big behemoth organizations or, you know, be super successful as an agent, it's going to take some money. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're a master networker, which I absolutely love networking, you can run your whole business. It takes a little bit of time to set these things up and everything else like that. But if you want to incorporate technology, and that comes with a particular level of leverage, if you want VAs, these things, they take capital, right? So as we see these bigger teams absorb more of these costs, it's going to make it harder and harder for, I think, the smaller agent or the individual agent to break in. And I just wish that they would come in with a business plan. I wish they would really, truly take some business courses versus, you know, everybody says, read this book, read that book. Those books are all great. But if you don't understand the flow of business and how a business operates and the structure of business, then you're just going to be a hamster on a hamster wheel.
No, I couldn't have said it better. I totally agree. It's a competitive world. It's getting more competitive. And the truth is that the top agents are going to be able to handle even more deals because they're getting more efficient with their time. They have these assistants. They have this technology. Many of them have great CRMs. So a top agent that might have done 40 or 50 deals before, maybe now they're doing 60, 70 deals. So for the new person getting into this, it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. And so I think getting coaching, like you were saying, getting good guidance, learning how to start a business, all that stuff you're saying is really critical for them to succeed.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, man, I could talk to you all day long, but our time is up. So, A, I want to thank you for being here with me. But, B, how do people find you and your book and all that good stuff?
Great. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. You know, I'd love to do it again. So you can find me. I'm big on LinkedIn. You could just look up Gregory Charlep, Charlep is the last name. Or I'm on Facebook, or you can look for the book. The book is Real Estate at a Crossroads, The Insider's Guide for Agents, Brokers, and Execs. And it's in paperback, it's in Kindle, and probably by the time you're listening to this, it may also be available in Audible. Oh, so Real Estate at a Crossroads.
Awesome. Well, y'all, you heard it here. I'm signing off. I'm Johnny Moe. The world is changing out there in our technology, so embrace it and understand it and plan for it. And not only just plan for it, budget for it too. Lead with revenue. And that's why we always talk about breaking down your commission checks and putting whatever percentage is comfortable for your business goals and needs into an account so you can have that capital when it comes time to spend it. I want to thank my guest, Gregory Charlep. And until next time, peace out, y'all.